Jedi to end.
Welcome to the Wampa's Lair podcast. Deep in the bowels of the frozen ice caverns of Hoth, our hosts, Carl Eclair and Jason Hunt, discuss all things Star Wars. So join the conversation and hang out here in the Wampa's Lair.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to episode 233 of the Wampa's Lair podcast. I am your host, Carl Eclair, and unfortunately, Jason couldn't be with us. He is recuperating from the glory that was Phoenix Comic Con, but I am certainly not alone. I am joined by a first-time guest, but a seasoned veteran of the podcasting world of the Star Wars universe. It is Matt Rushing, the host of 602 Club and Aggressive Negotiations, among many other things. But Matt, I am so glad you're here.
Man, I'm really excited to be here, too. One, it was great to meet both you and Jason at Star Wars Celebration. And just get to spend time with you guys and everybody else from the Star Wars Report family and beyond. And goodness, what an opportunity to just really dig into Star Wars fandom in a beautiful way. But really, too, I think there's nothing better than getting to meet all of the people that you've listened to over the years, which is really fun.
Yeah. Definitely. And I completely forgot, as per usual, because whenever I host, I screw things up. This episode is titled The Force and the Jedi. And Matt and I got into this awesome discussion shortly, like 2 minutes after meeting each other for the first time. And I was just so, again, taken with your perspective on Star Wars. And specifically, we met shortly after seeing the Last Jedi trailer, right, with this closing statement Luke makes, you know, it's time for the Jedi to end. And you and I just got into this awesome talk about a whole lot of things in general, but even more specifically, this idea of the Force and the Jedi and the relationship and symbiosis between the two of them, and what could it potentially look like in the Star Wars galaxy if the Jedi were to go away. And, you know, we were talking for a while, and I can't remember why, but I had to run off to something. Oh, yeah, I went off to a panel that I left early because it was so bad. But so I won't say what it was. But and I was like, oh, man, I cut a great conversation short for this. But I do remember I said, Matt, we've got to get you on the show because I want other people to hear all these great things you're talking about. And now, obviously, it's been a little over a month away from the experience of Celebration. But I thought this would be a great thing to sit down and talk with you about. But before we even hop right into like kind of the meat of this conversation, you know, now we have this perspective of kind of looking back, it's a month later. How does the experience of Celebration sitting with you, not even just the Last Jedi trailer, but just, you know, the experience of Celebration. I often talked about the post Celebration blues. I can say that they are finally gone. you know, how is it sitting with you? And also, wasn't your first Star Wars Celebration, was it?
It was my first.
It was your first. That's right. Yeah. So tell me, like, where are you at now a month later?
I'm at a month later. I feel good. The thing about leaving Star Wars Celebration is that you're leaving that community and all those people, you know, I mean, yeah, and everybody says that, you know, about Celebration. I think any con that you go to where you know more than just maybe one person, there is a sense of community, and because you're all there for Star Wars, it makes it so much easier to connect with people and meet people that you know online and everything. And so I think for me, that was the thing that I was just kind of missing, is I was missing everyone and getting to have that opportunity to talk Star Wars all the time and just talk about what we were talking about, you know, in our conversation and beyond. I mean, there were so many great things to talk about, and meeting all these new people too, that, you know, walking by Pablo Hidalgo in the hallway and just being like, hey, Pablo, how's, you know, that kind of stuff. Those are the kind of things that can only happen at a Star Wars Celebration. And so I think that's the thing that I've missed the most. I don't miss the no sleep.
Okay. Yep. That's fair.
Yeah. But the time together with friends is, you know, that stuff's irreplaceable. And so luckily a lot of the people that I met or know at Celebration, you know, I keep in contact with pretty regularly, so that's nice. But, you know, there's nothing to – it's just not the same when you're not, like, in the same room.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I totally get that, right? I mean, I think that's everyone's post-celebration experience is the absence of that close group of friends just around you for four straight days. Because that is irreplaceable. And, I mean, I know, looking back, I had the luxury of not having to go to work the day after I got back. You know, I had a day off. And – which was immensely important because, like you said, you don't sleep a lot while you're there.
Yeah, no, you do not.
And especially now with like the way they have them run, where it's like if you want to get into the big panels, you either have to pull an all-nighter or you have to be up at, you know, 3:30, 4 in the morning to go get in line. And then there's still absolutely no guarantee.
I stayed over at one of those waits for a panel all night and still didn't make it into the main stage. That's how busy Star Wars Celebration has become. You know, after you've got, you know, the Force Awakens and of course Rogue One, Star Wars has exploded into the cultural zeitgeist in a way I don't know if anybody thought it could get bigger, but it has.
I mean, I know at Anaheim it was the biggest ever, and it was, I think there was 44,000 people, but this broke 60. You know, I mean, and that's a significant jump in 2 years to go up 20,000. That's a big jump.
Well, yeah, and in a smaller venue, in the sense of the main stage panel room is smaller than Anaheim by quite a bit.
Yeah, yeah.
So that really, I think, put a damper on some things for a lot of people, but. And overall, the experience for me was really good and enough to make me feel like, man, I'd like to go back in a couple of years when they have it again.
Yeah, yeah. You know, everybody was saying leaving it that, you know, if only you could combine the two convention centers, because Orlando has a bigger show floor than Anaheim. Anaheim, I felt so congested. And imagine what that would be like with 60,000. When I was on, like, the main floor, it was so congested. But like you said, right, like Anaheim has these massive viewing showrooms, so you know you didn't have the issues you were having in Orlando. So we'll see. I'm hoping for Boston Celebration 2019, so I can just, you know, hop on the subway.
That or a lot of people talked about, you know, they had one in Indianapolis, and the convention center is right next to the stadium, which is very helpful. Where you could have legitimately pretty much everybody go to those main panels, because you could do it in the stadium where everybody could be seated. I know that they probably will do it in Anaheim because Star Wars Land is going to be opening and they want to have that synergy, but it's unfortunate that would kind of be the case, because there are better places around the country to hold a convention that can house more people than, say, you know, Florida or California location. So, but who knows? I mean, maybe they'll see the number of people they had here and think, well, gosh, by the time The Last Jedi comes out and Han Solo, maybe we should really think about doing a place where we can hold 100,000 people.
Yeah.
Or you just need to sell less tickets. You just need to cap it.
Yeah.
You just have to make that call. So.
Right. Right. Yeah. And eventually they're going to have to make a call like that before it starts to really sour folks. You know, I mean, I think this was the first time, I mean, that was my third Celebration. I was at the first one in Orlando, or the one in Orlando a few years ago, Celebration 6, when the last time they numbered them, and then Celebration Anaheim. And I remember Celebration 6, I don't recall any complaining at all. Anaheim there was some, but this most recent one, I mean, that was kind of the story of the weekend, right? For a lot of folks was dealing with these issues, and you don't want that to become the common experience of Celebration, because you then folks will stop coming.
No, absolutely. I mean, if that happens, you know, you kind of ruin the luster of Star Wars Celebration. I don't think they want that to happen at all. I don't think they will let that happen. And so that's why I definitely think, you know, the next one will be in Orlando, and that will be because there's a bigger main stage floor, and with Disneyland right there opening you know, Star Wars Land. At least that's when it's supposed to open, as long as everything's on schedule. So, but you know, you're right. It's hard to when you just have that many people. So,
yeah,
I will see. But I think I'm still willing to go back and give it another go and have a good time.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, even if I didn't get into any of the panels, I still would have a great time because of the reasons we've already talked about, community and friends. You know, you can still have that even if you don't get into the panels. So, yeah, nothing will stop me from going unless, again, like they do cut ticket sales and then I don't get one.
Yeah.
That would be the only thing to stop me. Or obviously financial reasons. But,
start saving up now so you can get that VIP and then you don't have to worry about anything.
Oh, I know it. I know it. Yeah, Matt, I really thought it'd be fun to kind of, you know, jump into this possibility, because right, like that's all it is at this point, is a possibility. And we were just talking even before we hit record about, you know, so this, the kind of the shaker up comment of the Last Jedi trailer is right when Luke at the end says, you know, I only know one truth. It's time for the Jedi to end. And you and I, we were both just talking about, well, that could be a very early line in the film, and then it's immediately like, you know, by halfway through the film, maybe Rey convinces him otherwise. Or like you were saying, it could simply be it's time for the Jedi to end as the way they've always been, right? Like it could be half a quote, you know. Yeah. I mean, there's a pretty good chance they're throwing that in there for the purpose of for these conversations. Mm-hmm. And to get us excited and riled up. And but what was your kind of initial response and reaction to that particular line?
You know, I think everybody's initial response is kind of just their mouths agape. And they're like, you're trying to clean out their ears? Did I just hear Luke say that? Like, did Luke Skywalker just say he needs the Jedi to end? And, you know, it's not surprising, though, I don't think, because one of the things that anybody who is well-versed in the new canon, and if you're not, just a quick summary. So a lot of things in the new canon have been leading us to this idea of the middle and the middle way. And in the sense of that you have somebody like the Bendu who's in the middle. You have somebody like Ahsoka who, you know, obviously is not a Jedi anymore. She was on Rebels. She says she's not a Jedi. You learn in the Ahsoka book, you know, her lightsabers that, you know, she's taken and made new lightsabers from the crystal of an Inquisitor. She's cleansed those blood crystals and they become white, which, you know, is you know, colorless. And so all of these ideas, I think, have really been something they've been kind of hammering on hard. Throughout the last couple of years in Star Wars and just kind of throughout the canon in different places. And so I'm not really surprised to see Luke say that in the sense that the Jedi need to end. I think the major question really, as you posed at the beginning, and something we had been talking about even at Celebration is that a question of that the Jedi just need to end the way they've always kind of viewed things? Or is it that the Jedi need a reformation?
Mm.
You know, that the Jedi have moved from where they were, which was somebody, were people who were more in the middle. I mean, if you even look at the Jedi logo, there's this big center middle, you know, almost as if like the lightsaber firing up in the middle and the firebird around it is the light of the lightsaber in the middle. And everything kind of hones around that kind of like star-like in the middle too and all that. I think that's really something that's very interesting to me. And I kind of would like if it was almost like a Jedi Reformation. Like it's time to go back and rediscover who we are and where we went wrong. And that would also make sense for Luke, who has lost his own Jedi, and to have left to finally try and rediscover, okay, what am I doing? What if the Jedi maybe been doing wrong? And I think that makes for an interesting point, because I think anybody can argue that the Jedi were doing some things wrong for sure, especially in the prequel era.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's what a cool point, the Jedi Reformation. And if you think about it, even in the just even looking at the films, the prequel Jedi and the original trilogy Jedi, which is essentially Obi-Wan, Yoda, and Luke, compared to this massive galaxy of Jedi in the prequels, but the Jedi themselves, like, they have changed in the films. The prequel Jedi are not the Jedi of the original trilogy. And now it seems that, you know, and it's probably evident that whatever Luke built up, whatever this academy was he was building before it gets destroyed, was going to be different, I would think, than what the prequel era Jedi were. Maybe not. Maybe he tried going back to what it was. You know, I mean, if I'm thinking of, again, Legends, right, when he starts the Jedi Academy in Legends, he's doing his best to try to rebuild. He's modeling it after the old Republic, but he's changing some of the rules, for instance, like Jedi can marry and things like that. But it seems that we don't know what Luke is going to build. We just know that his training and his experience as a Jedi is immensely different than a Jedi of the prequel era.
Well, I think that's one of the things that's fascinating. Just as you're talking, I was thinking, even think about the way that Luke is trained by Yoda and Dagobah and the difference between that and what we see Anakin being trained. And not to put down like Obi-Wan Kenobi, I mean, because they're following the tenets of the Jedi Order, that time period. But Luke is trained in a way which is much more in tune with the Force. Like, everything is about the Force. It's not about a code. It's not about any of those things. It's about almost rediscovering the roots and the original nature of what became later a more formalized, I'm going to put it in these terms because it makes sense, religion. And that they had lost some of those roots, and that the Jedi Code, in a lot of ways, and a kind of mixing between Christian and Jewish thought here, but in a lot of ways, the way that the Talmud and Jewish tradition was the rules of the Pharisees added to the Law of Moses, whereas the Law of Moses was just the first five books of the Bible, they added more. And in the same way, I feel like the Jedi Code adds more, because we even learn in one of the, I can't remember which new canon book it was, but that the whole idea of non-attachment and having no spouse and things like that, that's not an original part of the Jedi Code. It's been added throughout the years.
Oh, interesting. I have not come across that in the new canon. I'd be curious to...
I can't remember where that was, but I found that fascinating that it's just something that had been tacked on. But it makes sense, because as you move forward, you kind of add these rules to things, trying to keep you from going down certain paths. But it almost seems as though that blocks the will and the way of the Force, which when we think of the Force in general, it's almost as if it's a river, you know? And then sometimes I feel like the Jedi Code specifically was almost putting stones in the middle of the river, mm-hmm, that were impeding the flow of the Force instead of always being in tune with it, which is why Qui-Gon is so influential in reforming, I think, the way that Yoda begins to look at the Force. Throughout especially the end of the PT. And then in the same way that he has that influence on Obi-Wan Kenobi, even. Because Obi-Wan Kenobi isn't necessarily, even though he is the ultimate Jedi, he also is one that still plays outside some of the rules sometimes.
Yeah.
I think all those things, the way it all comes together, and when you really start to dive in and think about it, I think this is what made that conversation we were having so rich, because it gets really deep. And it could be really interesting with the way where they go with the storyline. It could be a really cool storyline. And that's my hope, is that it'll turn out to be something like this that really advances the ideas of the Force, what it means, and a further refinement of the study of being a part of the Force and all of that stuff in a way that gets our hero characters back more in tune with it than kind of feeling like they might be a hindrance to it.
Mm. Yeah, that's a great point. You know, it's got me thinking about maybe Luke himself, how he changes in the 30 years between Jedi and, you know, Force Awakens. You know, you've got Luke who, like you said, I mean, his training, both with Obi-Wan and specifically with Yoda on Dagobah there, you know, the entire essence of that training is about being in tune with the Force, right? Like Yoda's constantly saying, you must feel it, right? It's this idea of relationship. And, you know, I think in the Star Wars mythology, you know, how personalized is the Force is up for debate for sure. But I think what's not up for debate is the fact, though, that you are supposed to have a real connection to it. And that's really what Yoda harps on with Luke. And I think ultimately the reason Luke is able to redeem Anakin is because he is so in tune with the Force that he's willing, he's able to see something beyond the vision of both of his masters, right? Like Yoda, specifically Obi-Wan, thinks Luke needs to destroy Vader. And Yoda never says that, but he says confront, but Yoda says, or Obi-Wan is going to kind of keep insinuating destroy. But Luke sees a new vision, which again shows us as an audience that Luke is so in tune with the Force at this moment and at this point in his story that he's able to see a new vision and, you know, reap the rewards of that. But by the point, you know, of Luke, you know, we cannot ever forget the importance, if not to me, probably the most important moment in Luke and Yoda's relationship is when Yoda's dying and says, pass on what you've learned, right? Like that is his dying mandate, is that Luke continues the Jedi. He doesn't say Jedi Order or anything like that. But what wouldn't surprise me is, you know, 10 years out, 15 years out, as Luke starts putting these pieces together, starts building this order, right? You have to inevitably start institutionalizing something, right, in order for it to stick and to progress. And maybe that's where Luke starts to fall out of tune with the Force, right? Because he's now limited by the burden of establishing an order.
That's a great question too. I think that we're circling around this idea of, you know, and I absolutely agree, you know, when Yoda says the last of the Jedi will you be, I don't think he's saying you're the last Jedi. Like that's the only Jedi there will ever be. I think he's saying there are no others. There's no Kanan. There's no Ezra. There's nobody else that's a Force user. You're the last one that has any connection to the Force in this way, that's been in any way trained whatsoever, and pass on what you learned. How you pass that on is a really big deal. Maybe one of the mistakes that Luke makes is that, and I think something that John and I were talking about in Aggressive Negotiations, is the mistake one that he creates an order that there's nobody else to be training these kids but him. And instead of taking the one-on-one approach where it's very slow and methodical, where you train one and then they go and train one and then, you know, it builds from there. It's a lot slower that Luke takes on the mantle of creating an academy, basically, like we've seen in Legends. But he's the only one. And therefore, he doesn't have the time to specifically, like Yoda did with him, invest fully. And that's what leads to what happens with Ben. That's kind of what I'm wondering, if that has something to do with that. But on top of that, I mean, it just really seems like, too, this whole idea of being in tune with the will of the Force, like, it seems like being in tune with the will of the Force means you have to know the Force so well, you have to be so in tune with its flow, that any action that you do creates in the same forward momentum as the Force is moving, instead of a pushback. And that, that one of the reasons that the Jedi got into so much trouble in the prequel era is because their action was actually against the flow of the Force, and that's what caused the imbalance to begin to grow, is because they were using the Force in a way that was counter to the actual Force. And so I'm wondering if that's something too, where Luke, when he says the Jedi must end, the way that everything's been done up until that point is the Jedi acting are reacting instead of being so in tune with the Force that their action is just a part of the greater movement of the Force.
That's a, you know, and that makes me think of everything you're just saying. This, you know, as these the Jedi as being simply, I like that imagery you gave us, kind of the Force is this river flowing, and they're just simply, you know, either sticks floating down the river or little pebbles, you know, going with the stream. It makes me think of Chirrut, right? Like, look at Chirrut in Rogue One, right? Like, this is a non-Jedi character. They make it very clear he's not a Jedi. I mean, they literally have Baze say that to us.
Absolutely.
But this is someone who clearly is in tune with the Force. You know, I mean, they have been... when I say they, I'm the Star Wars story group specifically, has really been kind of expanding the understanding of what the Force is and who can use it, who can access it. And I think it was Pablo Hidalgo who made the comment about, you know, essentially everyone has access to the Force. It's just simply some have, you know, a more unique interaction with it, I guess you would say. But I remember it was Dave Filoni who made the comment about how, you know, when Han Solo is fully present and immersed in his piloting, he's tapped into the Force, whether he knows it or not, right? It's this idea of really being tapped into who you are, in a sense that you are in communion with the Force. And I think we see that with a character like Chirrut.
Well, and then communion with others, because I think you're talking about Chirrut, you know, may the Force of others be with you. And there's that whole idea from, you know, some of the original scripts that George had. That was the original saying. Yep. And this idea that if the Force flows through all living things, then it is the Force of others, because it's all of us together. And so that's where, again, you even can connect with the prequel trilogy when Obi-Wan Kenobi says, well, but you're in symbiotic relationship with the Naboo. What happens to one will happen to both. And that whole idea of that, when we forget that we are in concert with one another, even in just real life, to bring it full circle, I think, is that's where greed and anger and hate and all those things come from, that destroy that symbiotic relationship and harm not just others, but then yourself too, because you've harmed others. And so I think the way that George created the idea of the Force is such an interesting and smart idea, because it does really tap into, as he wanted to, most religions' idea that we're in this together, we're connected together, and what we do and how we act and all that is important because of the connection that we have with each other and the relationship that we have with each other. And, you know, then of course, the relationship we have with the other, whether it's the Force or God, you know, that's a whole other podcast. But I think it's such an interesting idea, because that whole idea of specifically Chirrut, there's no Jedi, but there's still the Force.
Right.
You know, and it's still there. And I think that's just absolutely phenomenal when you look at it. I mean, there's a whole other discussion of whether or not they need to... especially in the literature, be a little bit more forthcoming with the other Force religions they keep mentioning, and especially in like the Guardians of the Wills book that just came out and things like that. They keep mentioning all these other Force religions, but I have no idea what they believe or what they do. They just so. But I think that's another fascinating thing that maybe might come out more in The Last Jedi.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, man, I was just thinking that. You know, you made, right, we hear Chirrut say, the Force of others be with you, which is the original screenplay's line for may the Force be with you. But what's also interesting is in that original screenplay is that the Jedi were called Jedi Bendu. That was the title of the Jedi.
Yeah.
And, you know, so interesting now that the Bendu is this character in the middle. But the original title George gave Jedi were Jedi Bendu. And, you know, and what George was doing when he created this concept of Jedi was essentially a hearkening back to the days of the samurai in Japanese culture, right? They're kind of these warriors, but they're also beholden to a code of conduct, a code of morality. So the Jedi I think when George originally created them was they were like the wizard characters, but they were, I mean, to me, it's almost like they were originally like kind of like Chirrut. They were spiritual monks, right? Warrior monks.
Right.
And, right. And like, and then obviously that idea has expanded. So, you know, I think, what we might see when we move forward into The Last Jedi is, you know, again, like Luke is aware that things weren't working, you know? I mean, we don't know exactly how long before Force Awakens, everything kind of fell apart. We still don't know exactly. I mean, Bloodline happens, what, 6 years before Force Awakens?
It's, and Luke is still with them. Have any idea of whether or not anything bad's happened. It doesn't seem like it has at that point. Leia just hasn't heard from Ben in a while.
Right.
So, yeah, it seems like that's really quick. The timeline's very muddy.
Yes. Yeah. And, but right, like even if it's 5 years before, right, that, like, you know, that book is supposed to take place 6 years before. We don't know exactly what's going on with Ben and Luke because Leia has been out of touch for a while. So it could already be happening for all we know. And there's also no mention in the book, though, of a Jedi Academy. So, you know, it's just Ben and Luke are off on some adventure together. and again, I'm hoping we're going to get some of that stuff fleshed out in whether it's literature, TV series or whatever in the future. I'm sure we will. But, you know, when things kind of fall apart, you know, it's pretty clear that Luke had an academy. He had, Han makes it clear in Force Awakens, you know, he was training a new generation of Jedi and then it fell apart. So, and when we see Luke in Force Awakens, again, it's a obviously very short amount of time we see. He says nothing, but, you know, again, the beauty of Mark Hamill's acting there is incredible. The emotion he wears on his face, this man has such a weight on his shoulders. And, you know, I've said this, you know, in discussion with Jason on previous shows, but I really hope that the reason Luke is on Octu and the reason he left to go find the First Jedi Temple is because he's trying to reconnect in a very fundamental way with the Force and trying to figure out what is the will of the Force for me moving forward. Again, I don't like the idea, and I really hope this isn't all it is Luke just leaves because he feels sad, right? Like he just gives up and walks away, which is fine. Yes, that's human, absolutely. But Luke isn't supposed to be a little human like the rest of us. He's our hero, right? I think... Sure, he's definitely going to leave in part because he's broken, but also Luke is the type of character, he's the hero with the resolve that says, all right, I'm going to go figure out what I need to do next. So I'm hoping on Octu, obviously he's come to some new revelations of things need to change. And to use your terminology, it's time for a Jedi Reformation.
Well, and that something that I don't remember who I was talking about, too, but we were talking about the idea of, you know, in Legends and Fate of the Jedi, Ben and Luke go off on their great hunt of all the different Force users and religions throughout the galaxy. Mm-hmm. And it would make sense to me that Luke would do something similar after everything happens with Ben solo in before The Force Awakens. And that's one of the reasons he ends up on Octu, hopefully. Which every time somebody says that, I just want to go bless you.
Yeah, right.
But that's what he's been up to because he's trying to get to the bottom of the idea of the Force and maybe understanding it in a way that he hasn't yet. And to get back to that point where he can, you know, In religious terms, you know, the reason that Martin Luther puts a piece of paper with 95 theses on a door is because he rediscovered, or at least he felt like he rediscovered, the core of the Christian gospel, which is grace by faith alone. Faith by grace alone, excuse me. And so that led to a reformation of the church in the same way that what is Luke missing from his understanding of the Force that would lead him to that idea of being further in tune with the Force that allows him to see a new way, because right now I feel like in many ways, Luke's really kind of looking, and it, probably after Ben Solo does what he does, he's looking for this, to put it in, well, I guess people would think of it in Star Trek terms, but it's really Shakespeare terms, the undiscovered country of the Force. Like, he doesn't, he doesn't even know what he doesn't know.
Star Wars Episode 7, The Search for Luke.
Yeah. All that he knows is that he needs to find out what it is that he doesn't know, so he can finally know it and fix it. And I think that's a really interesting place to have Luke. And it is a little frustrating. And I can understand why Mark Hamill has come out recently and said that he's maybe a little frustrated with he's straight up said, I didn't really like where my character was.
Oh, he's specifically said, yeah. I fundamentally disagree with what Rian Johnson did with my character.
Yeah.
You know, that's a heavy statement. I mean, said it like Mark Hamill only can, and then said, but like, I've been wrong before. And he wasn't saying that, I don't think, in a, like, I'm crapping on Rian Johnson here. Although it might be a veiled way of doing that. We'll have to wait and see. It's very clear that they have taken his character somewhere that he himself wasn't expecting. And I think that's big coming from Mark Hamill specifically, because to me, Mark Hamill and Anthony Daniels are the two actors that have most fully embraced and become, in a way, their characters. They feel a profound connection to those characters and how they've developed and who they are. Although, how much can you really say for 3PO? He's a droid. And also, I'm not a huge Anthony Daniels fan, so I won't go there. But I don't think he's a very good human being. But that being said, for Mark Hamill to come out and say something like this is big. And I think, in a way, can be good, because it shows how much they are shaking up who he is and what he's about. Because when Return of the Jedi ends, I will probably say this till the day I die, you don't need Episode 7, right? When Return of the Jedi ends, don't need Episode 7. And that's not to say, like, I don't want any more Star Wars movies. Certainly not. But you don't need it. So that's right. But that becomes, I guess, in a way, a good challenge then for a sequel trilogy, is, well, what story is there really worth telling? And I think that's going to really get unpacked in Episode 8, right? 7 was just a reintroduction. 8 is going to have to start fleshing that out. But when Return of the Jedi ends, we can just assume, and Legends to a certain degree did this, Luke just goes on, he starts a new order, things, there's bumps along the way, but overall it's successful. I guess that's debatable considering the roller coaster that is Legends, but right, like, even without Legends, like, you as just a specific moviegoer leave the theaters and say, great, the good guys won, he's going to start the Jedi and all will be well. I think the good that can come out of this new story, though, is, well, how is Luke going to figure out how to do this, right? Like, how does he implement a very, very accelerated Jedi training into a new order, right? Like, without the immediate instruction of Yoda and Obi-Wan. We don't, again, there's a lot of speculation about Force Ghost showing up in Episode 8, and I wouldn't be surprised if we at least see the ghost of Yoda, just from Frank Oz's little bits of involvement around the set. I'm pretty sure we'll see Yoda. Luke is essentially doing this on his own. So how is he going to do that? And ultimately, it's going to have to be different. And worth mentioning as well, in that trailer, right, the little scene of these the books, right, which I really think at least some of them, if not all of them, are the Journal of the Wills. And they're resting on something that a lot of people think is the Bendu. I don't think it is the Bendu. It kind of looks like him. I think it's that, like, sacred tree from, yeah, the Force tree from Shattered Empire. But it's very clear that Luke, kind of using your analogy earlier, he's reconnecting with the core of what the Jedi were destined to do. One of my favorite things in all of the Clone Wars is in the Episode 5 episode, The Gathering, and the younglings come into the temple there with Yoda on Ilum, and Yoda says, the Force made visible a Jedi is, and a great responsibility that is. And that's essentially, to me, like, that is the definition of a Jedi. They make the Force visible, right? Just like a Christian makes, in a way, the gospel of Christ visible, right? Like, that's what a Christian's ultimately called to do. Make the, you're the body of Christ, make Christ visible. What is a Jedi to do? Make the Force visible, right? Like, you are an incarnational way of being the Force. So if that's what the Jedi are, can they ever really end?
Well, and that's, I think that's the thing that, and what, when you couple all these things together, that's where it seems to me that the Jedi need to go back to what they had lost, because they had lost that ability to be just the embodiment of the Force. Because if your whole goal is to be in tune with and in line with the will of the Force, you can't be in service of any government. Mm-hmm. And the Jedi have placed themselves subservient to the Republic, to the Chancellor, over the years. And that's a fundamental misunderstanding of what their role in the galaxy is. And I think they only, and specifically, I think Yoda realizes that at the end, the ways in which some of those things have happened to kind of corrupt them from the inside out, basically. And it's evident in the fact that their temple is on a city planet where nothing living is, there's nothing growing, there's nothing alive, and they're in an ivory tower on a rotting corpse. I mean, because the Coruscant is rotting from the outside up, you know, it's just, it's a rotting hollow core. There's nothing of value down there. And you can just see how far the Jedi have come from where they should be. Mm. And no, I don't think they can end. The role and the way in which they function has to change, or they would just continue to go the way they have, which, sadly, is what seems like Luke kind of maybe steps in.
Yeah.
Like it seems like Luke makes a mistake that leads to what happens. And I don't think it's just training Ben. I think it's just, there's probably a lot of things. And, you know, I think as fans, we're so ready for those answers, and we're so frustrated that none of those answers have really come in the form of any of the literature, because they're holding all the cards back until at least episode 8 comes out, if not really 9, where they can really further dive into everything. And that's a little bit frustrating, and it makes some of those novels in that time period really frustrating. It makes that timeline in that area feel muddy, because you kind of feel like you're looking through, like, dirty glass. She's like, can I just wipe it all off? So, yeah, I think it just creates this desire in us as in fans to know. Now I start to feel like Spalko in Indiana Jones 4. I want to know. Maybe I should stop asking to know, because it's dangerous.
Yeah, can't know at all. When I was thinking about talking about this with you, I wrote down, you know, can the Force exist without Jedi? And I wrote, absolutely yes. Right? That's like saying, can God exist without particular religions? Absolutely. Right? Like, none of those things are needed. But, you know, the role of the Jedi, and this is kind of, this is going back to even originally what we were talking about at Celebration. You know, just, again, like, if we were to say the scenario of, like, yes, the Jedi are going to end, there's going to be a new generation of Force users called something else. I think the problem with that isn't so much a canonical problem as it is just, it's too much of a messing with the mythology of Star Wars, right? Like, Jedi are such an essential element of the Star Wars world. Now, granted, yes, folks can say, well, look at Rogue One. There's no Jedi there. Sure. But could you tell a trilogy story with Rogue One? Probably not. Like, part of what, you know, Star Wars fandom sinks their teeth into is the lore of the Jedi. And, you know, So I'm talking about this outside of the, you know, kind of lived in world, but, you know, just from the sheer sense of filmmaking, can you end the Jedi? I would say no. I mean, I would say within the galaxy, within the universe, absolutely, yes, you can end the Jedi and have a new generation of Force users called something else. But I think, again, that would be a huge discredit to what Star Wars is and is such a huge element of it, right? Like, how many fans do you talk to where Jedi are their favorite element of Star Wars? Or, you know, some of the folks that I know that Attack of the Clones is their favorite movie. It's because of the ending Jedi battle, right? Like, so you have people that love the Jedi for myriad of reasons, right? Like, I mean, I love the Jedi because they're the spiritual element of Star Wars, and that's my favorite part of Star Wars. But you have some folks who just love lightsabers and like the, you know, just like these samurai warriors, which is what Jedi symbolize as well. And it's such an essential element of Star Wars that I don't think you can get rid of them. Again, I don't think they're going to. I think they're just, again, it's an evocative line to catch our interest and to get us excited and riled up. But I think, you know, like we've talked about, it's either that's not the full line, or maybe that's where Luke stands at the beginning of the film. But again, it's come out in numerous articles about how one of the central elements of this film is the relationship of Rey and Luke. And I think it's not so much Luke just training her as it is Rey opening Luke up to new things, or him seeing through her new possibilities, right? Like, I wouldn't be surprised if initially Luke is a bit reluctant because he sees, you know, this just very strong innate force ability within her and doesn't want to unleash another Kylo Ren or something of that nature, right? So there's going to be a little bit of maybe a drawback there. But also I think he's going to see her as part of the will of the Force, right? Like the Force brought her to him, right? In the same way that Qui-Gon was in no way looking for a chosen one on Tatooine and Phantom Menace, right? But he saw that it was the will of the Force. I think we can see Luke having a moment like that. You know, and
there's that whole part in the trailer where he's training Luke and there he's like, "What do you see?" "I see dark light, the middle, and so much more." And you get this feeling like that there, that that's the whole point of the film, is it's blowing open the doors to what we understood the Jedi to be. And I tend to agree with you when I think of like, so do you even want to continue after this sequel trilogy to another one? You know, if they ever do, I mean, I really can't imagine not wanting to have the Jedi involved in some way in that. You know, it just seems very difficult, especially if, you know, you're trying to even bring new people into that one. You know, Jedi is a word that permeates the culture, and therefore, when you come into Star Wars, you kind of know of that. You know, even in Rogue One, there are no Jedi, but they are mentioned. And their lack of being there is felt, and their impact on the galaxy is felt, what happened before, you know, and so their loss is huge to the galaxy in the sense of how they lost the galaxy to the Empire. I mean, all of that, it's there, it's permeating Star Wars, and I think that's one of the things that you can't take away from Star Wars is the spiritual aspect, because it's something that was so important to George. Even from the very beginning, George said, there's an interview, sadly, strangely, it's in Playboy magazine, but it's an interview that he did years ago. And now the only reason I've read this is because I have the George Lucas interview book, and it has all the interviews from all the way back in, I think, 76, all the way to 1999. So it's all the interviews he did in that time period. And the interview, he says, the reason that he wanted to create Star Wars is because he saw a generation of kids growing up, and I'm paraphrasing, without the morals, meanings, and messages that he knew were so important. And his goal was to say, look, there is a God, there's right and wrong, and life tends to go much better if you do what's right. That's just... that was his point of creating Star Wars. That's why it's for kids. So I think if you do take away the spiritual aspect of Star Wars, you are kind of taking away something that George felt very strongly about. And it's why I think it permeated the Clone Wars series, especially all the way up to the very end where it ends with Yoda. I mean, they made sure to finish that arc because it was so important for George to talk about the Force, in that way, the Mortis trilogy, that kind of stuff. But even Rebels, you know, created with Dave, has been diving into this idea of the Force and giving us more opportunity to understand the Force. So I think if you take away the core of Star Wars, which is its spirituality, you kind of hinder it in some way, and it just becomes another action adventure sci-fi thing, and that's not what George intended, I don't think.
Right. And you know, and I don't see that ever being under threat, you know, taking that element out of Star Wars because of specifically what they're doing now, you know, in Rebels and even in Rogue One, right? Like bringing in, there's a lot of people who said like, well, you know, what was so unique to Rogue One is there is no spiritual side. I think Rogue One was one of the most spiritual movies in Star Wars. It was more spiritual than the prequels, right? And that's not knocking the prequels, because the prequels are obviously lacking in spirituality because like of the things we were talking about earlier, right? The Jedi has become so obsessed with their code, and that's their problem, right? They've lost sense of their spiritual core and have become instead this dogmatic institution. But Rogue One, yes, it's just basically Chirrut, but the effect that he has on everyone around him, right? Like Baze rediscovers his faith. You know, the fact that Jyn comes back to the fold, the fact that Cassian, you know, kind of has a little bit of a transformation experience, right? The fact that all of that happens, I would say in a sense, is because of their interaction with Chirrut. I wouldn't put it all on him, certainly not, you know.
Well, I think part of that is also Jyn in her connection with the Kyber crystal she wears around her neck,
yeah,
with her mother. And right. The fact that her mother was obviously a believer in the Force, even though she was not Force sensitive. And I think that was something that was so interesting, is that if you watch throughout the movie, every time Jyn pulls her necklace out and is kind of holding it, it's almost, it's a very spiritual moment. Mm-hmm. And there are many times when that happens where then a turn of what you may consider luck happens. The biggest one being when they're going to Scarif and she pulls it out as Bodhi is talking to the command center to let them in, to Scarif, let them in. She pulls that out and she has this almost like prayer moment.
Yeah.
And it works. And then she looks over at Cassian and it kind of, she's even more centered, and it helps heal their relationship in some way. She gives him that little, you know, pat on the arm and, yeah, and everything. So there's a lot of spirituality, I think, in Rogue One, like you're saying. And part of that's Chirrut, part of that's Jyn, and part of that's just because the Force is so ever present, even if there are no Jedi
right
there. Yeah. So I think that's a hugely important thing.
Yeah. Well, I think one of my favorite lines in Rogue One, and this is my own interpretation of this particular scene, so it may very well not be the intended reason for the filmmakers, but right after they finally, you know, Jyn and Cassian successfully send the transmission, they don't know if it's even received, right? Like, we see that it is. They don't know, and Cassian says, "Do you think anybody's out there?" And she says, "Yeah, someone's listening." And my interpretation, again, it's my interpretation, but this is somebody who comes at Star Wars always from kind of the spiritual side, is to her, like, I think it means two things for her. It's a both and. Yes, like, I do think the fleet's up there and I think they do get it. But also, I think she thinks the Force is listening, right? Trust the Force is the, mm-hmm, yes, you know, one of the first things she kind of hears in this film. And it comes full circle here, is she knows that something's listening. And again, like you were saying earlier, kind of a topic for another day, but, you know, is the Force something personal or not? Again, different topic for a different day. But at least I think for Jyn at the end of that film, you know, she does believe that the Force is listening and is indeed working. And I would say the Jedi are the most literal response to the Force, right? It's the most concrete way of being in response to the Force. And that's why I would say that the Jedi are so essential to Star Wars. Yeah, you want to say something? I can see.
Oh, no, ahead. I was just thinking, and it seems that the Force has a way of making sure that there are people that can be in tune with it more than others, hence the midichlorians.
Yeah.
That's specifically the will and the way of the Force working out in people's lives to do that, which, well, if you want to get really crazy about it, is that some sort of predestination of the Force, choosing who is more in tune with it than not? That's a really interesting question, but it's one that gets raised when you think about this that deeply of how it works. And so that's I would say in general, I think the Force is a little bit more personal than we've given it credit for.
Yeah. And I would say it's a little more personal than some folks want to admit, you know, in the fan community. Mm-hmm. And I am in no way by that statement trying to say that to all of those of you who are not religious, you're wrong. No, of course not.
Oh, no.
It's not like that at all. But, you know, I think...
just our point of view.
Right. And to me, the one thing I always fall back on that I would say kind of at least supports that without necessarily trying to be a specific religiosity, but is George's desire to reignite the young person's mind for spiritual things. You know, he never, you know, makes hard boundaries as to what that can look like and what it can be. But it is very clear that bringing the Force and the Jedi into Star Wars was for the very purpose of helping people remember kind of the sacredness that exists in life. And sacredness can exist divorced of religion, and, you know, for sure, you know. But anyway, so yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm excited to see what they do with this, you know, and I don't think the Jedi are going to end. I think they're going to change, and I think they have to. Because again, like I said, in both trilogies, the Jedi have at the core been the same, right? They are Force users who try to do the will of the Force. You can say that for both the prequel and the original trilogy era. I'm pretty sure you'll be able to say that for the sequel era. But how they go about doing that is going to be very different, right? We see that for however long the Jedi Order existed in the prequel era, right? I mean, 1,000 years, if not longer. You know, what they were fundamentally about is very different by the time Revenge of the Sith rolls around. So, you know, there's a very violent reformation in a sense, mm-hmm. right? The Jedi we get then in the original trilogy are training the new chosen one, right? Like, I don't use that with capital C, capital O, but, you know, the new chosen one, the one who's going to, you know, bring the light back into the galaxy, you know, Luke Skywalker, is, you know, they're training him in kind of the fundamental essence of being in tune with the Force. And that's what Luke is obviously going to in some way impart to whatever comes next. But again, we are going to have to see, the knowledge that will light our way is, you know, what went wrong? Was it Luke's training method? Was it his teaching method? Was it, again, him just getting burdened by the task of starting an order? We don't know, but, you know, again, just that line, the Jedi must end, it's...
There's a line and there's a story in the new book, Rebel Rising, about Jyn, and she's on a planet and she hears a story about this, I think it's like a starbird, and it's a story about how the starbird, basically a star, you know... explodes and it creates ripples and the dust goes out and then it forms back up and then, you know, so it's this recurring thing that happens. And it made me think, you know, Star Wars is much about that as well. Republics fall, empires end, and new republics come to a fiery end. And that things continually keep happening almost in this cyclical nature in the Star Wars galaxy, but that the thing that has been through it all has been this, the Jedi. And when you think about the Jedi, held peace in the galaxy for 1,000 years. That means something, and I don't think you can just discount those 1,000 years. So, I think that. That becomes the question then for Luke. Okay, what caused them to lead to the fall of the Jedi? And how do we get back to a place where we can help the galaxy have 1,000 years of peace again?
Mm-hmm.
Or more?
Yeah.
And so I think that's something that kind of gets forgotten. The Jedi are responsible for 1,000 years of peace in the galaxy.
Right.
You know? So that means for 1,000 years, things were pretty good.
Yeah.
It really seems to be in the last like 50 to 100 years that we know of the Star Wars galaxy where things haven't been great. But that's because there was a problem with the Jedi Order. And that's what we've been talking about tonight. And how do you fix that? Well, how do you fix a problem like the Jedi? I don't know, Luke, but hopefully it's better than Maria. Or at least with less songs. Just kidding. I don't dislike The Sound of Music. It's a great movie.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I'm pretty sure we're going to have an evolved look at the Jedi moving forward.
Maybe for a more civilized age.
Yes. So yeah, I don't have much more else to say at this point. Is there anything else that you feel like needs to be said that maybe I'm missing or
wow, you haven't? Carl, I think there's so much more that we could say and that could be said about this subject, but I think we've done such a great job of really, I don't know, just looking at it, and I'm excited to hear what other people want to say about it and what their thoughts are on the subject, because this is not a question that I think anybody will have a firm answer to for a while in the Star Wars galaxy. You know, I think we won't feel like we maybe can have a fuller grasp until, you know, episode 9 with a lot of these kind of questions. I don't think episode 8 is going to answer all of them in the first place. So, you know, we have a while, but this is what makes Star Wars so much fun. And, you know, Bruce Gibson and I were talking about this on the 602 Club when we were talking about the Guardians of the Wills book and a little bit in the Rebel Rising book that we discussed as well. You know, we don't want all the mysteries answered for us point blank.
Yeah.
You know, we just want enough so that we feel a little more comfortable, but that maybe bring up some different questions, you know, and that's the part of being a fan is you don't want all your questions answered because then you don't have anything left to explore. And so I think we're right there in that place where there's just too much to explore.
Right. Yeah. That's a good point. Right, yeah, we can't know everything. We don't want to know everything, you know. I mean, that's just for instance. I mean, just thinking back to some of the lash out at Boba Fett's appearance in Attack of the Clones as this clone. It's like it wasn't that fans didn't want Boba Fett. It was just like we don't want to know where he came from. Right, like that was one of those things. Right,
like well, and then they just didn't like what George did. But that's a whole other subject.
Right, but there are certain things in Star Wars we don't want to specifically know because.
Like Yoda. I don't ever want to know where Yoda comes from. Right. I love the mystery of who yes. Yoda, his people is, the fact that he's been around for over 900 years. I mean, I don't want to know.
Right.
It's more fun just to kind of have this mysterious little green dude who has a understanding of the galaxy that nobody else does. That's what makes it kind of fun.
Yeah, for sure. So, hey, Matt, thanks for... I really loved this discussion, and I'm really glad that we were able to basically sit down and answer the question is, will there be Jedi in the future? And I think
it's totally... I mean, nobody needs to go any further. We you know, completely answered that question.
You guys are set. You're welcome. So, you know, obviously, time will tell. We have yet to see, but... one last thing I do want to say, because I'm just thinking about that specific clip in the trailer where Luke even is, right? Like, there's something to be said about the setting when he delivers that line. Now, granted, it's a trailer, though. That could change. Maybe it was a voiceover in a different scene. But Luke is standing in what clearly seems to be a cave. He is silhouetted by light, right? But he's essentially in the dark. And even his clothing looks awfully dark. And I think that speaks to where Luke is. In the film, he's in a dark place looking for the light. We don't know how long he's been on Octu. I mean, he could be there for 5 years. He could have only just been there for a year. We don't know. But Luke finds himself in a dark place. And I think the reason he is in that dark place is because his Jedi have ended. So for him, it must be time for that to end. And I think this story about the last Jedi is going to actually be about, you know, in another way, the return of the Jedi too, a return of new Jedi.
I just I feel like Luke needs to get to that place where, you know, like, he just needs love to lift him up where we belong. You know, where Minoc fly over Octu high. Just, I feel like he needs to go there, you know? But I love your point. I think that's actually, it does seem like Luke is in a very depressed and dark place. Maybe not like dark in the sense that he's going to the dark side.
Right.
But just that there is a sense of foreboding for him of what do I do next. And what I would love is for Rey to be that source of light to help show him the way. In the way that almost Yoda, you know, Yoda had to be encouraged by Obi-Wan,
right,
to train Luke. Yeah. He didn't want to. He was too old. And maybe that this is that moment for Luke of finding his way back into the galaxy. You know, I mean, again, Yoda is a good example. He's been out of the galaxy and been out of the limelight for a really long time. And Luke is kind of his way of being back and influencing the galaxy again.
Yeah.
And Luke has at least been gone somewhere for a long time now. And this is his way of, maybe this is his way of finding some redemption for himself, you know? He helps redeem his father. Maybe he feels like he's in need of redemption now. Mm. So maybe this could be about the redemption of Luke Skywalker.
Yeah. And in a different way.
Yeah, right? Absolutely.
You know, it's, I don't think Luke's going to the dark side. I don't think he's at the dark side. I don't think he'll go to the dark side. I'd be utterly shocked by that. And honestly, I'd probably walk out of the theater, and say, I'm done with Star Wars. But, that being said, right, like being in a dark place doesn't mean you're on the dark side. And I think, you know, so much of what Rey's character was about in The Force Awakens, you know, one of my favorite scenes with Rey is when she's with Maz Kanata and Maz says, you know, the light, it's always been there. It will guide you, right? Like, Rey is the light of the new story. She is the new Skywalker. And not that she, I don't think she is a Skywalker. I think that's, I still hope so, but I decreasingly thinking so. That being said, she is the new light bearer in the Star Wars galaxy. And I think she is what Luke needs, right? Like, he could be on Octu. Maybe he has discovered a lot of answers, but he's just not ready to go back. But I think he is aware of Han's death, obviously. And that's going to be part of it. I think Leia probably will have sent a message with Rey or with Chewie or R2, right? We can't forget they're also there. You know, I think Rey is going to offer him, like you said, like some form of redemption. Mm. You know, I think a lot of the fan community is thinking, well, Kylo's the one who's going to be redeemed, right? And maybe, maybe not. I mean, if he is, like, I don't really want another Darth Vader story in the new trilogy. I mean, again, like we've already said, you know, if you're going to tell new movies, new stories, you have to have a new reason for telling them. You have to have a new angle. And I'm confident that they will do that. So maybe that is really it. Maybe Luke is kind of the redeemable character in the sequel trilogy, but in a very different way.
Mm, so absolutely.
But I think we've exhausted this for now. before we go, a couple quick housekeeping things for us, if you don't mind, real quick, Matt. So we've obviously still not done our last matchup from two episodes ago because last episode, last week, we wanted to do that 40th anniversary commentary for A New Hope. Again, apologies for the static in that broadcast. I don't know what was going on with Mixler, but hopefully it won't happen again. But we still have that matchup of Darth Vader versus all of the Inquisitors and Darth Maul. So again, if you want to write it on that, we're going to repost that on social media this week for next week's show. So just a heads up for that. But that's it from me for Wampa's Lair stuff. Matt, tell folks where they can follow your stuff. This is what I love. I love being able to get guests on who are better hosts than me, which doesn't say much, but like, I just love other people's perspective. I mean, this is why, I mean, when I met you at Celebration, it was just like, I gotta have you on our show. Like, you have such a awesome mind about Star Wars. So I know you do so many other things that folks are probably going to want to listen to. So please tell us how we can dive into Matt Rushing's world.
Yeah, well, thank you. This has been a blast. I mean, these kind of conversations are what make Star Wars go around, you know, and what make it so much fun to be a fan of it. And, you know, this is what we were talking about earlier. It's you get to meet fans like this at Star Wars Celebration and have those kind of things happen. So it's worth it. You can find me on Twitter. That's a good place to follow me to kind of keep up with everything. MattRushing02 on Twitter. I am on a couple of different podcast networks. One is called The Nerd Party, and that's at thenerdparty.com. I do a couple of shows there. One is called Aggressive Negotiations. I do with my friend John Mills, and it's a Star Wars show where we kind of pick out very... you never know what you're going to get each week because we don't always know where we're going to go. Specifically this latest episode or one of the ones most recently, we got to have both Bill and Bob, who are the executive producers from the Freemaker Adventures, on to talk about the show, which was a blast. We had so much fun. John and I have just both recently gotten into that show. We absolutely adore it. If you're not watching it, there's something wrong with you as a Star Wars fan. It's just phenomenal. It's the funniest thing in Star Wars. Go check it out and check out the episode. It was a lot of fun. So that's what we do there. I'm on the show there also called The Owl Post. And that's a Harry Potter podcast. We're going through each and every chapter of Harry Potter. We're in the second book at this point, The Chamber of Secrets. And then I'm on a network called Trek FM. That's trek.fm. You can find it online. I do the 602 Club, which are general geek show. So we talk about every fandom we love, from Star Wars to Harry Potter to Marvel, DC. I mean, we try and fit in as many fandoms as possible. And so that's a lot of fun. And then I do a show there called The Orb, which is about Deep Space Nine, Star Trek Deep Space Nine. So, and then I have another show in the works coming soon. So,
man, how do you have time?
I don't know. one will be a show about the spirituality of films, specifically from a Christian perspective, and that'll be coming soon. So, just check out Twitter so you can see when that one releases.
Very cool. Dude, you rattle off all that for me just to say thank you for making time to be on this.
Oh, man, it was fantastic. I'm so glad we got to. I really am. And I had an absolute blast talking about Star Wars, the Jedi, the Force. I mean, again, you know, this is, as we talked about, these are the things that make the Star Wars galaxy kind of go round. And these are the conversations that make it so much fun. Because not everybody agrees, but it's just enjoyable. So... I really appreciate you having me on, and I love having you and Jason is close friends now because of Star Wars Celebration and Star Wars and podcasting all bringing us together. It's an awesome world.
It really is. Well, you know, again, can't say thank you enough, and I really mean that. It was so great getting you on, and I know it was, you know, we tried to reschedule so that we could get Jason on, but you're obviously so busy with all these other great shows that I was just like, you know what? The heck with it. I want to talk with you about this. I want to continue our conversation from Orlando. Let's just do it. And, you know, I was so glad to have you on. It was awesome having this conversation. Thank you again, everybody. If you are not plugged into some of the stuff Matt does, I highly encourage it. They do great work. And that's going to do it for us on this episode of the Wampa's Lair podcast. This has been episode 233, The Force and the Jedi. For Matt, I am Carl, and we will see you next time here in the Wampa's Lair.